you lost your family. And then it's like, oh, this is so sad. But look at those abs. Do you think romanticy can appeal to guys?
The character archetype of the love interest is always the same.
No thoughts of their own or any motivations beyond, I must serve this woman. Like, that's it. That's all I want in my life. It's like, that's it? That's all? Weren't you a person 5 minutes ago?
Welcome back, everybody, to another Tudor Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
I'm the other host, Richard.
Our problems with romanticy. You saw the title. And we are going to express on the behalf of both romanticy lovers and haters, I think we can provide value for both of you out there. For the people who don't like the genre, we're going to illustrate and explain our critical issues with the subgenre of romanticy. We've read ACOTAR Book 2, Fourth Wing, Reign and Ruin, just to name, actually, those are all the ones we read. And
we may be missing one or two that I've just now in one ear, out the other, but...
Now, does that mean we've read the whole plethora of the subgenre? No.
No.
Does not mean that.
But as we have been recommended books, we've trying to read like the biggest, most popular books in the genre, the things that are selling the most, what people are enamored by. The fact that when we were at a Rebecca Yarros style event, like there was an event and Rebecca Yarros was also there, people were lining up out the door, rapping, like these are the popular books. People love them. And we don't. And we want to explain why.
And I also want to be aware of this, too, because I always refer back to this article by C.S. Lewis titled On Science Fiction. And in that essay he writes, where he's defining what science fiction is to him, he expresses that what he didn't like at the time, and it's probably still happening today, is when people criticize something that they don't even appreciate.
Yeah,
he talks about that, of how can you be critical of something? You don't even have a good example of it, so how could you be critical of it? We're going to come at it from this lens, which I might be helpful. We love fantasy.
Yeah, if you can't tell.
We're obsessed, and we love romance.
Romance
is awesome.
If you
can't tell we love romance, too. We love both of those things. But romanticy, the subgenre, so it's the book pattern, the books that we're talking about, again, Fourth Wing, ACOTAR, those ones we listed. We can name plenty of books that we love that are romance books, have romance elements in fantasy books, or just obviously tons of fantasy that we like. So yeah. I want to define the genre, and the reason we're coming from this critical lens is we love the things surrounding, that we love fantasy, we love romance, but here's our problem when this specific type of book is written. Right?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to...
The main thing is...
coming from a place of love, okay?
These are common problems that we hope to... Maybe if you're writing yourself a romance book, you can maybe avoid these pitfalls to get curmudgeons like us to actually enjoy your book. That's what we're here for.
Yeah, write for the people that don't like the subgenre.
Exactly. That's always the best strategy.
Okay, to give some... Before we get into our issues, just want to last thing clarify. Some romances that we love. Right?
Yes. Romance, I mean exploration of a romantic relationship, which is a little bit broader than I think maybe other people would say. So something like The Sword of Kaigan heavily features a romance element to it. Now, it is not your standard romance, but it's more of an exploration of a relationship, a marriage. Same thing with...
This Is How You Lose the Time War is a science fiction book that... We love, that's a great book.
Great book. It's an awesome really book. Fun romance. Really love
we
that. Can,
and we won't spoil this stuff. We'll give you spoiler warnings. It also be wary of that. We will let you know if anything's coming.
Pride and Prejudice is one of my, it's a top tier book. I really loved that book. It is my gold standard of romance. Of like, it is my North Star.
Pride and Prejudice,
it really is. One.
When in doubt, just look.
When in doubt, I'm like going, okay, another Mr. Darcy clone. I've seen it once. I've seen it 1,000 times.
Yes.
So.
And that's just some of the books. Obviously, the other subplots and small romance elements we like in other books, too. So those are some of the top ones.
The problem is when you added it, you add a romance is the main feature of the story, and put it in a fantasy setting is generally trying to do it a 50-50 split.
And the thing is, too, when romance is the point of it as well, so literally in my top 20 movies of all time, you have the movie Your Name, La La Land, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. More come to mind as well. So it's not, again, it's not an aversion to romance. I don't want to be like the, oh, people doing the icky. No, it's going to be more than that, okay? So it's not an aversion to that, and it's clearly not an aversion to fantasy. We don't have to list all the fantasy books we love, okay? So this is what we're talking about specifically. And how we're going to break this down is in our reviews that we do, we have categories we break them down in, and we're going to talk about first characters and say, what are the character issues we have then? What are the plot issues? What are the thematic issues? And so on. That's what we're going to do, okay? And all if right. you like diving deep on stuff like this, go check out our Patreon book club in the link in the description below. This month, we are reading Contact by Carl Sagan. Thank God the patrons voted correctly. I am so happy.
Somehow won.
Yes.
Sometimes it gets it right.
They got it right.
They got it right this time.
Okay. So, but okay, want to get to our problems with romance now.
Yeah.
Starting with characters, Rich.
Yeah. I'll go right out of the gate. Yep. The biggest annoyance and problem with my pattern recognition in romantasy.
Yes.
People are more than their attraction to each other. People are more than their attraction to each other. For some reason, these books, like 90% of the dialogue.
Don't be generous. It's 97.
97% of the dialogue, both external and internal dialogue, is how they have the hots for each other. Look, that's fine. People are attracted to each other. The inner monologue of, oh my God, he's so hot. Oh, so dreamy. Like, look at, like, abs you could grate cheese on. All right, got it. It's great. But is that all that's in your mind? Like, there's a war going on. There's other things surround. Like, you've just lost you've lost your family. And then it's like, oh, this is so sad. But look at those abs. It's like, my God, keep it in your pants for 5 goddamn seconds.
Fourth Wing has a lot of that.
It is. Mm-hmm. It's annoying. But no, it becomes a point where that seems like that's all the character is. And not even, oh, I am so enamored with this person and everything about them. It's more, oh my God, they're so hot. Ah, they're just so hot every time they open their mouth. I just want to put my mouth on that mouth. Oh, what was he saying? Oh, I'm ruling a kingdom. Oh yeah, I forgot about that for 5 whole seconds. It gets annoying a little bit. Like, I want them to be competent characters as well. That's all I'm saying.
These books do not pass the Bechdel test.
No, they definitely don't. Now, to be fair,
yeah.
The Bechdel test is dumb and stupid. But if you cared about the Bechdel test, it doesn't pass.
I'm thinking Lord of the Rings because, like, how many conversations, what the Bechdel test is what? How many conversations do you have that doesn't bring up men? Is that what it is, right?
Effectively, or related to men, and blah, 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 blah.
But it's interesting to me because what this does is the character constantly thinking about this love interest, specifically in that way, makes the character lose so much agency of, like, they no longer become this character with flaws, wants, and needs because everything becomes about the other person.
Yeah. Normally it starts off with a character that does have some type of need. There's some type of catalyst for this plot to take events. Like, the character has some desire to push the plot forward. And then when that becomes just so intertwined with the romance, they lose all agency and push toward the actual plot objective or any kind of character motivation. It's only about the other. And it's not even that significant about the other. Not like, oh, this character means so much to me. It's just, ah, they're so hot. And that's the entire point of it. Or, oh, they're so hot and, oh, they understand me. That's it.
And here's the thing. Hey, I get it. Women written by men. There's been bad books with that. There's plenty out there. But this version in romantasy, generally speaking,
I will say, caveat.
Yep.
This has been my tendency,
mm-hmm.
What I've observed. So don't shoot the messages. I'm just recognizing patterns. Mm-hmm. I'm a pattern recognizer. When men objectify women in their stories mm-hmm. of like, take the worst example, take the most extreme of like, they're, the woman is quite literally just empty head and a, just a pair of tits. That's all she is. Mm. Normally, that objectifying scene is like a page, two, maybe two scenes in the beginning, at the end, something like that. Yeah, is it insulting? Sure. Understandable. But it's a small fraction of the story that you can, like, move on.
Well, to be fair, that is how man brain works as well.
I know.
Because it's just like, okay.
The other side, it's the whole story. It takes up the entire page length, and it's real annoying.
Now to the subgenre fans, it's you need that buildup, that emotional tension to then actually have the satisfactory experience, that makeout session. Oh, now there's actually... there's emotion involved and there's a connection. It's not just the guy brain going, ooh, look, a pair of tits. And then that, it's just different brains, different biology. Okay.
Then I don't even think it does that well. That's the intention.
This is what I was getting
but
into.
I don't even think it does that. Go ahead.
No, sorry. Go ahead. Do your thing.
Continue, please. You were leading right into it.
The leading part into this was it's the character archetype of the love interest is always the same. And not just the same, but it always gets really frustrating because the male lead in these stories, it's always this, if there's a love triangle as well. The person that the main character won't fall in love with is trying to be too controlling and doesn't trust them to flourish enough as their own independent woman in a sense because they're overprotective. They care about them, but too much, and they're being controlling. And you know who does allow them more freedom is... more so their enemy, the bad boy, who the enemy respects you. And since they're respected, this enemy, slowly you get this enemies to lovers trope that works because, ooh, the person actually respects you and won't, we've said this before in our videos, but won't stand in front of you, but they'll stand beside you, right? Yeah, which, they'll stand beside you, arm in arm, to face the world.
My problem even with the enemies to lovers tropes, like, I would be far more interested with actual enemies to lovers. The problem that I keep seeing with these books is it's not real enemies to lovers. It's, oh yeah, we're enemies. Oh, we're bickering. But when you get inside both of their heads, it's like from the minute they saw each other, they were wildly attracted to each other. It's just yes. Like, oh my God, they're so hot. I just want to, both of them are madly attracted to each other from the get go.
Verses of romance we love. Again, not romanticy. I don't know is it spoiler? Okay, it's one of the books we mentioned earlier, but please bleep this, Nick. You know, there's yes. actual...
No, there's an actual enemies to lovers. Like, actual not attraction to... not attraction, but respect, which mm-hmm. is the first step. But yes. It's dynamic.
Oh, it's conflict. Or it's fascinating.
You get one of the best romance stories, like actually does this enemies to lovers well.
Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah. You know what? You know what the female main character was thinking when they first met Mr. Darcy? And by the way, if I'm spoiling Pride and Prejudice, come on. You've had long enough.
Skip 30 seconds if you don't want to be spoiled.
No, Pride and Prejudice. I don't care. I don't care about it.
You got 30 seconds.
No, you don't. You have longer. I'm going to keep spoiling
it. No.
This entire time, I'm going to keep dropping spoilers. Anyway, but no, actually against him. Like, oh my God, Mr. Darcy is hurting my sister's love life. And what a prick. And so I'm like, isn't he hot? And one of her friends is like, oh my God, isn't Mr. Darcy hot? It's like, eh.
Literally, Jane Austen is mocking the romanticy genre there.
Like, yeah, like, it's like, eh, he's all right, I guess, but he's more of a prick. They're actual enemies. She doesn't like him. And when he finally goes like, hey, I kind of like you. And she's like, ah, fuck off. No, you're a piece of shit. Then finds out, oh, he's not actually that much of a piece of shit. Hey, he's working on to develop this relationship. There's an actual change. It's interesting. There's tension there.
However, in ACOTAR, a general plot point that happens in book one, and this slight spoiler, skip 30 seconds if you don't want to hear ACOTAR, but it's fine.
we don't care.
In book one, it's Tamlin, right? And then she actually doesn't like player two, Rysand. Yeah. And then we come to find out he was a secretly good guy.
Yeah.
You have that's a typical trope that happens as well. Now,
and
yes.
In addition to that, mm-hmm. from the beginning, mm-hmm. as soon as he met her,
he was madly in love. Madly in love, of course.
Instantly. Of course. But
she did genuinely hate him, though, there was that. You know? Yes,
but however, as soon as she met him, it was also like,
he's a little hot.
He's so hot.
This is the thing, too. With that bad boy trope you see in a lot of the romantasy, again, the romantasies we're talking about here, where you always get the bad boy who's so bad on the outside, but then in bed and everything, they're extreme, like, oh, consent's the perfect, right? Consent's always great. But they are so consensual. They are so perfect with every boundary to the T of, like, making sure, hey, the reader knows this bad boy, he's so bad, but he's also, like, just the amount right and bad that he does just enough. He does just enough and leans back. And then he's like, confirms, hey, is this okay with you? This is okay. We signed our contract. All right. Next step. Like, it always screams going like, oh,
it's so cookie cutter.
I'm always asking myself reading this. I go to my better half, Nicole. I'm like, is this what you want? Oh my God. Do I need to go be like a super bad boy out in the streets? And do I need to like start breathing fire? Do I need to be Zayden essentially? Is that the peak female gaze? It's always that character that's in these books. That archetype. Why is that?
To me, it's more annoying of like just the cookie cutter. Love is messy. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a little like you push each other's boundaries a little bit. Like, oh, I went too far. Oh, you push back. It's an actual back and forth. Like, no one ever gets it perfectly because people have different sets of boundaries between each other and people have different levels. Like, that is part of the dance. Mm-hmm. And when these characters get together, they just they know each other's boundaries so perfectly. And it's just so cookie cutter. It's boring.
Yeah.
And thing is, this leads right into like the common trope of
plot stuff.
We can like
stuff still. Yeah, is, no, keep but going.
I want to add into the plot of mm-hmm. a messy character, a character that has different sets of boundaries and pushes them at different rates. Like, that would add into the standard, like, just universal trope of immediately after the characters have sex, mm-hmm. they have to have some type of miscommunication, something that basically breaks them apart for the plot's sake, and then they can come together at the very end. That happens every time.
And you know what? Specifically, when it happens too, it's because they have sex, or whatever it is in the book. Because some are more. Tasteful. Yes.
Yeah.
There's more and some less in others, but whatever that scene is that where they come together. It always seems to be that the bad boy was hiding something, right? Bad boy had some information. There was some miscommunication trope, right? Bad boy is hiding something, and our protagonist is going, wait, you didn't divulge all of your family secrets to me? Like, in the first hour of us meeting, you didn't tell me everything about yourself? And then that's where they have the...
Where it would have been... I think it would just add to a better story if... Mm-hmm. That one of the characters pushes the boundaries too far, except like thinks that the relationship is more than it is, and then the other pulls back, like, something of actual contention mm-hmm. rather than plot contrived split. That's the thing that bothers me. It could even just be actually in the whole sex scene of like one going a little too, not actual essay, get out, like that. Don't misconstrue what I mean, but the actual pushing of a boundary, going too far, thinking something is a little bit more, but then pulling off, going, oh, I didn't know. Like, some type of play to actually make it interesting. But no, it's never that. They're just always so perfect. It's annoying.
And the thing for, they always, sometimes the romances easily solve whatever plot is going on as well.
Oh, solution.
They fit the perfect, and they're always put together in the plot. And we're talking, going a little bit of plot here, then we'll go back to characters. But always in the plot, they come together because of some circumstances in Fourth Wing. It's because their dragons are mates as well. So they have to come together and deal with each other in some sort of way. And then we have the... sorry, what were you just saying before? Remind me of...
The plot convenience... reason why they have to split apart is always just a plot convenience rather than a character difference.
Yes.
With their relationship being messy or something... them having different... ideas about the relationship is
That was the issue there, because with the character then we have our protagonist who it would be great if their flaws, their wants, their needs, especially their flaws, the main character's flaws are then presented and actually explored in this relationship, where typically, as soon as it's the romance overshadows any type of character, right? They lose a lot of their agency, and it can solve plot issues where the plot becomes the romance, and any sort of fantasy conflict that was going on either is now the B story, goes by the wayside, or is more solved because the fact that they get together in the end. And it solves
the problem rather than, I think, would add more tension if the romance works despite the plot. Something where the romance is actually getting in the way. It's not the answer, but they fight for it anyway. Like that's more interesting than just, hey, literally all of your problems would be solved if you got together at the end of this book.
Mm-hmm.
That's boring. I'm a little tired of it at this point. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see it again.
And with Time War, I'm thinking about that and how, see what it does in Time War?
I know, actually.
Oh, man. So, yeah. That's a big issue. But with do you ever see the main character as a Mary Sue? Or is that not less of an issue?
Not really. I mean, there's, a Mary Sue is the definite, like, definition of Mary Sue comes from a Star Trek fanfic. Mm-hmm. Literally Mary Sue, where basically she is beamed up to the Enterprise and Captain Kirk is just madly in love with her, absolutely loves her, is all the like, oh, you're the best, you're the smartest, you're smarter than us, and just head over heels for you. Also, Spock is madly in love with her. It's like, oh, well, you're the genius. And basically the world revolves around Mary Sue. Everyone becomes less competent, and has way less agency than the central main character. And it's a self-insert type of character. That's a Mary Sue. Like, very few reach to that standard. But I think the hallmark is when other characters are around them, do they lose purpose, agency, and does our main character just drag everyone to them?
Do they become Jon Snow in season 8?
Yeah, sure. But I don't think Mary Sue is maybe the right word, but to the main love interest, yes, because they're basically not the main love interest is not a real person.
Yeah, Mary Sue's probably not the right word, but what it certainly is to me when I read a lot of these books, it's external flaws rather than internal flaws. So some of the issues, this is a basic plot point in ACOTAR, it's she can't read, right? And so that's honestly a plot point, at least fun. Right?
It's kind of funny.
Honestly, it's why it's one of my favorite books, because it's so funny. It's
ACOTAR book one is a worse book than book two.
But I like it more.
But I like it more.
Me too.
It's more fun. It's more fun.
It is so much more fun.
Book two is written better. And it suffers for it.
We say all of this and I had a lovely time talking about ACOTAR.
I did too.
It was very fun.
Yeah.
But I'm having just as much fun saying, why does it not work for me? And the issue is when you have a lot of these external flaws, but not internal flaws, it makes the conflict seem very much just whatever the plot needs in the moment, rather than the character actually having to overcome something. Because it's, again, the external flaw would be this love story of, oh, it's a fake, as you described earlier. They actually are infatuated with one another, and they just needed the plot to bring them together to also solve plot issues. Whereas how many times do we see in the books we've read where the character has genuine flaws that makes the relationship hard?
Yeah.
Okay, so in the romances I've loved that talk about that, a great romance just on its own, the character has, in Pride and Prejudice again, where the main character, guess who has pride and guess who has prejudice? Well, they both do.
But also, Mr. Darcy, the best male romance lead, has flaws, is not perfect. Like, to the normal man, he is perfection. But,
of course,
on the upper echelon of characters, he actually genuinely has flaws and does things wrong and has an attitude. But, like, there's flaws to him,
mm-hmm.
which makes it more endearing for them to work on it and overcome. And, they fall in love despite their flaws. Yeah, rather than the external of just, or the surface level of the characters are telling, the book is telling you the character has flaws, but ultimately they don't. Like, the bad boy trope of like, oh, they're so bad, they're so rough and hard around the edges. And they're ultimately not. They're like, you're told that. Maybe they give a mean stare, but they don't actually do anything mean or untoward.
They stared so freaking menacingly.
Like, give me some actual bad people. Like, I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah, yeah. That really, and because a romance is so, it's so reliant on you actually being invested in the male-female lead here. You being invested in with just the romance happening. Your protagonist and your second protagonist, their love interest. That's the important thing. And when there's so many critical flaws in that, it just won't work as well. Now, obviously for us that are currently hating on the subgenre, do you, so we've now described, we've described the love interest of them having this bad boy exterior, yada, yada. So we've also read an example where it's not really bad boy, just a paragon of what this main female lead needs and them fulfilling, being basically the man written by a woman of,
oh yeah,
in one of the books, I don't want to just spoil all this stuff, but
sure,
it seems to fulfill every single thing that our female lead needed, and the male lead is great.
Yeah, but ultimately they're nothing. Mm-hmm. They are nothing but a servant to our main character and have no thoughts of their own or any motivations beyond, I must serve this woman. Like, that's it. That's all I want in my life. It's like, that's it? That's all? Weren't you a person 5 minutes ago? Didn't you live a life with dreams and aspirations? Do those aspirations at all conflict with this romance? No? Okay. Or they do, actually, but you're willing to throw them all aside. It's like, okay, sure. No tension there at all.
Did you have any other plot issues?
It's both. So it's both a plot and a character issue. I'm not a fan of the trope of, and I briefly mentioned this before, but when characters, when they first meet and they're just madly attracted to each other,
mm-hmm.
and for the plot's sake, like, you just know they're going to get together at the end, and I hate that start. It's just really annoying. I see the whole plot from then on. I'm like, oh, okay. You can't have, like, the character that...
The holidays are coming up fast, and it's time to shop, but actually have some fun doing it.
Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else.
On uncommongoods.com, they provide art, games, books, DIY kits, home accents, and all sorts of accessories. What makes them unique is that about half of their assortment is handmade by independent artists and artisans.
Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. For moms, dads, teens, from book lovers to history buffs, to anyone who hit their quarter-life crisis and started running marathons.
Excuse me. Okay, well, that's my better half, Nicole. She's one of those marathon runners, and I got her a gift from the site. I ordered this custom medal holder for all the races she completes, where there's also a place to put her personal records on there. I'd never seen custom-built case like this before, and so I got her the gift, and I'm gonna surprise her with it.
Yeah. Hey, every time you purchase something from Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Also, every purchase you make, Uncommon Goods gives $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice.
So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off of your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/2toramble. That's uncommongoods.com/2toramble for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Maybe, you know, there's, and again, this is a problem with just, I think, the writing style of like 90% of the page time of the internal monologue of these characters is, oh, how hot that other character is. If you dialed that back to some degree and like, yeah, hey, describe him. Hey, he's pretty hot. You spread it around. Then you add the chance encounter. Like, I would be going, oh, I wonder which characters are going to get together. I wonder how this, how this relationship is going to bloom. I would be curious. But no tension of that. None of that.
Mm-hmm.
From the minute they see each other, I'm like, oh, okay, that's the lover interest. Got it.
And that certainly could be the case in, I'm thinking of Time War that comes up. But if you make the romance and the back and forth fun, in that case it's poetic and interesting, or
Yeah.
But if that journey between their romance is the plot beat of, oh, they don't like each other. Okay, they're going to have sex. And then after that, there's going to be some sort of splitting off in the all's lost moment.
Which never is a satisfying split. It's never a good reason why they break off.
It's like, miscommunication.
Or the male character didn't reveal all of their deep secrets that they've held their entire life immediately after. Yeah.
It's something like that. And then they end up getting together in the end. Yeah, there's always that sort of plot sequence that happens. And what is it about? Is it the setup gets you more because is it too predictable and it's predictable a bad thing to you? Or is it the way it's predictable? Because
adding into the plot, normally the setup has other elements of the story. Like this is a romantasy. There's fantasy. There's normally dragons are invading or the kingdom is in danger or political strife or something going on that's important plot moments. And that the hook can often be very intriguing. I'm like, oh, I wonder how they're going to solve this issue. Oh, I want to see this develop further. And as soon as the romance really hits its stride and starts taking front and center, all that other stuff is just background noise and almost feels like a distraction and barely given any page time. I think I described this in one of our last reviews on a romantasy novel, is the book can be very thick, but as far as the fantasy plot element, it's a novella length. Like you could tell, like if you cut out the romance, that book is a novella in plot. Not a lot happens. I feel that's a flaw. If you're going to do a romantasy, I don't want them to use fantasy as just simply a setting.
That is, because talking world building, that is what it seems to be, is that the fantasy gets overshadowed.
And, I mean, it's fine to have, like, different focuses. Because here's, I'll give a difference here. Uh-huh. If you're doing a more cozy fantasy romance, I think that works far better. Particularly, there's a cozy-ish fantasy that had a romance played a significant role to the story. I liked it a lot more because the plot is far more cozy in nature, you can focus more of that attention on the romance. But when there's epic end of the world, like the kingdom is in danger, and you keep relegating that to like the sideline, even though the main character is supposed to be integral to that plot line, it suffers. It'd be one thing if it's in, honestly, I'd be very interested in this in a romantasy story where, you know, the kingdom is in danger, big plot events are happening, but we get the romance of small, lower on the totem pole characters, that they're not that influential, meaning they don't have a lot to do in the larger plot. They don't have a large stake in it.
Just narrow the focus of the story.
Hey, great. Now we can tell this romance story because we got the page time. The characters are not really focused on saving the world. And we can let that romance play out. But if they're really integral to the plot, it gets real frustrating when the end of the world is at stake and they keep focusing on their partner. Do they still like me? I'm like, please.
I want to
keep it in your pants for 5 minutes.
I want to see a romance between an elderly couple. I want to see like two old people who are widows. And you know how there's always that plot trope of, man, nobody sees me, but this person sees me? Mm-hmm. It literally fits, because how many times is an older woman overlooked because you lose what society deems is like, you know, beauty and all these things. And now you're an older woman and it's all that just gone. And hey, this one man that comes by my tavern, he sees me.
I mean, to this part, the element, the romance element in Guards is why I like it. It's two characters that are very much overlooked and very much on standard attractive of beauty. Like, never thought they would see it in their life, just who they are. But when they're with each other, they feel seen and understood. That's why I like that one so much. Yes, it is very cute.
Yeah, but the fantasy, the world-building elements of the story, I mentioned C.S. Lewis at the beginning of this, and that same essay he talks about, one of the subgenres that he doesn't like is when, and he was talking about sci-fi, by the way, but when he talks about a subgenre in sci-fi he doesn't like when it uses
the elements of the story, the sci-fi is there, but that same story you told could have been just told at home. And really the sci-fi is there just as
a backdrop.
A superfluous backdrop that doesn't change the integrity of the story. You could have done the same thing, but just not added the capital F fantasy on it. And a lot of these stories, yeah, dragons are very cool, and there's a lot of this stuff, but it, the bare bones of it, did this story need fantasy in order to tell it? Or is it more so the fantasy adds the element of having an age gap in ACOTAR? What an age gap. But besides the point, does it just add another? Is it there to titillize even more? Is it, oh, having the monster or having the werewolf in Twilight? Having whatever. There's a category. I think there's three or four that come to mind. There's pirates, werewolves,
CEOs.
That's another one. There's categories of tropes that are done, and it seems as though the genre is used more so to heighten that tension or the sexual tension or interest, whatever it might be, rather than for story purposes. So that's where the fantasy also acts as another just backdrop, rather than, oh, this needed to be a fantasy story. Could you have told, Lord of the Rings, sorry to use Lord of the Rings as an example, but that needed to be fantasy in order to tell that story. But then when I look at another story, I go, this could have been sci-fi, could have been horror. Was that completely needed? Does that fit all the puzzle pieces to tell your story you're trying to tell?
And very often the fantasy element, both the plot and the world, often just... It feels like, to me, I want more focus onto it, but it feels like in the writing that it's a distraction to the act. Like, oh, we got to quickly get through this actual, the end of the world, the dragons, the plot. Like, that stuff has to be rushed to get through so we can get back to the romance. And when it feels like that, I'd rather just one or the other. Mm-hmm. It feels like it distracts. For each one detracts from the other.
And the key thing here with the romance, because obviously what's not connecting for readers like us is we're not feeling the fun back and forth and the, ooh, they're going to end up together. I could see that being that's why people read it, right? They're reading because they enjoy. I love enemies to lovers, for example. Now, not the examples we've seen here. I like it in stories, though, but it's something about that relationship that gets people invested. Because I know a lot of romance readers in general will read the back of a book, and they will see, what is the ending? Do they end up together or not? And that'll determine whether they read it, because it's just to their taste, their liking. What do they want to do? So where I'm coming from as a reader, I want to talk about themes in this part, because where I'm coming from as a reader is I love love stories where I'm connected to the characters, but also says something about love. That's often a great bonus. My favorite love stories will say something about love as well. It'll make me look at something from a new perspective. Time Wars, a different character's perspective I've never thought of before. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the movies that I mentioned was set, I don't want to spoil anything, but La La Land and Eternal Sunshine especially, and Your Name, all of them actually say something that changed my view of, just make me think differently about love, which is beautiful. All these romanticies seem to be excitement over thematic interest. For example, when it's a love story, it seems to be more of a lust story for most of the part. When most of it is just focused on attraction, okay. Is that the most interesting thing about a romance for me? No. I want something more meaningful
next level. Most of these romanticies will go over trust. Mm-hmm. And I think very misguided. In many of these stories, it's about, the reason why they're disconnected is the male lead doesn't actually fully trust our female lead and with everything. And so that causes a rift, and it's all about do we trust each other to stand side by side? And that's love. That's generally the one layer deeper that they go for. There's attraction, and then, we trust each other. That's about that's how deep it tends to go. But most other romance stories give far more depth than that I've just haven't seen. Mm-hmm.
So you found that to be a thing as well. It's just more so the attraction over saying something deeper than, I guess, trust is
Yeah. And hey, I mean, I guess if that's the point and that's the entertainment, that's the fun.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm just not finding it fun. It's not enjoyable to me, especially when the back and forth needs to be the fun part, and the will they, won't they, and the tension, and just, or even if you know they will, there has to be, at least on paper, in the moment, will they, won't they.
Mm.
And you never get that, at least with the books we're reading. So
do you find another thematic element could be, does it set up unreasonable expectations?
All of these do, but that's the case.
I mean, even regular fantasy does. Does it set up something that you think is unhealthy at all? Would you go as far to say that, or were you more in the camp of it's just the fun stuff? You look to escape. You're just reading a story that's
I wouldn't go so far as to say unhealthy.
Yeah,
I think it tends to just be kind of the cheap entertainment, in the same way that a guy will read some, you know, sci-fi
pulpy
story, yeah, where, you know,
gets the girl,
like they meet, you know, our character is new in the world, he's climbing up, and like the first attractive woman he meets is just madly in love with him instantly, like gets the girl, meet, like, yeah, mm-hmm, sure,
self-insert,
is that setting unrealistic expectations? Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. But is it just supposed to be entertainment for him?
Yeah. Yes.
It's in the same way.
That's mostly what the romantics are. It's more entertainment.
Yeah.
Right.
I would like them to do a bit more.
What is it about the entertainment just emotionally that doesn't hit for you? Because forget all that we're breaking down characters and plot, the themes that don't work. Why does it just not emotionally hit for you?
Because I identify with neither character. I can't put myself into the shoes because they feel empty inside. That's really it. That's what we're talking about.
Got it. So you're saying you don't feel empty inside.
I don't.
That's
feel
positive.
Empty.
You're mentally good right now. This is
I
great
feel
news.
Like I have a lot to, like, as a person. I am more than just one tracked mind. I have aspirations. I have dreams. I have attractions. I have feelings. I want the characters to be characters, not just lust machines. That's all they are.
Yeah.
It's annoying.
Mm-hmm. And the climax of a book being a climax, is that an issue you have? That's not something you're looking for, I imagine.
To be fair,
mm-hmm,
just as word-wise, like, it feels appropriate, you know? Like, if you're going to make that kind of story, the climax of the book should be the climax. There's something satisfying of that being true. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I appreciate that just as I put that sentence together. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, reading it, is it enjoyable? No. Do I enjoy reading smut scenes? No, I find it weird and gross. I don't like reading it. It's not fun. That's going to get the entire time. Like, no matter what, I don't like reading sex scenes. It's not enjoyable. Not had a fun time. Have you ever had a fun time reading any of those scenes? Are any of them entertaining to you?
Well, no.
We're already on the wrong foot.
So that's the less. I can't be like, oh, this is, people are going to like that. Other people would taste.
Other people are going to like it.
They're like, hey, they look for that in books. But I can't even say, even the romances I like, I can't be critical of the sex scene. Just, I don't like any of it, right? So in the same thing with a movie, all the things that I've listed, all the romances I've listed that I've loved, there's none of that. Really. Yeah. I mean, if there is, it's a scene.
Or a cut to black, which... Yeah.
Which, on the same lens, can somebody come and say, like, look at this action or this this Red Rising, whatever type of stuff that you like, of just going blood and gore and battles and stuff. I don't like reading action battles like that. I know your mom, for example, doesn't like the war stories, is it?
Generally
speaking. And that
doesn't like combat war stuff.
Yeah, and that's... I could see that being the case if you just don't like that certain thing to read.
Well, for her specifically, she was in the army.
Yes.
And
why was she going to read that? She lived it, right?
Yeah, and she finds it childish. She's like, mm-hmm, why would you want to read that? Like, I experienced actual shit. Why would I do that? So, mm-hmm, but that's her position on it.
Yeah, but in that same vein, she just doesn't like reading that stuff. We don't like reading that. And that's also going to be part of the reason why these stories don't work.
Yeah.
And so beyond all the reasons we gave, it just comes down. Yeah.
Do you think romanticism can appeal to guys? Are we looking at it as like, this is just not for men?
That's a great question.
Is that even a thing? Or is it, can they appeal to men?
It's a great question. Now, the examples that we've used, so Time Wars, I think the closest piece, it's sci-fi romance. It would be science-y, whatever the science version of romanticism is. I think Time Wars is a perfect example of. Mm-hmm. It's not romanticism because it's not fantasy.
Yeah.
But it's the closest you can get to it. For, are you saying for us or in general?
In general.
Because,
of course, obviously,
yeah,
like the target demographic of romanticism is women. Duh.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but to me, it feels like why do I not see it? Why do I not have an appeal for it? I don't see how men generally would appeal to this.
The first thing, it doesn't have to.
It doesn't have to.
It probably shouldn't. And that, so the first that thing is the...
That's perfectly acceptable.
The
yeah.
answer to that should be don't appeal to your audience of who wants to read your books, not to us. So yeah. the first thing is
Rebecca Yarros should not take our advice and actually
Very successful books.
She's
that
writing successfully
love.
To her audience yeah. and they like it. Good. Like, That's fine.
And that's an important thing, too. I bet you she's writing books. The common writer advice you get is write a book you want to read.
Yeah.
That's what she wants to read. That's what she wants to write. So I wouldn't say that's the case. I don't think people should just appeal to, let me hit everybody. Let me make sure I get, can I make sure, change things so that literally I appeal to everybody? Because as we've talked about before in past videos, appeal to everybody, you end up pleasing nobody.
Yeah.
Please your audience. Please you as you're writing the book.
Yeah. I am not saying that romanticism should try to appeal to both men and women. Not saying they should. They don't have to. You tell whatever story you want. You want to appeal to women? Awesome. You want to appeal to men? Write that kind of story? Awesome. You can have whatever target demographic you want.
Yep.
However, for the genre in general, as it stands now, do you think it is just a male-female divide? And that, like, it's just not the genre for men.
Generally speaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I struggle to try and think of, like, maybe there's some of these romances that men can like, but I struggle to see the enjoyment or how men would enjoy these stories.
Mm. Because we've been talking about, we've been talking about distinguishing the romanticism from fantasy and then romance stories, right? We've been it's so strange that I can pick out so many romances I like, so many fantasies that I like, but when you combine it in this version, I don't like. So is it something about the popular ones we're talking about, the ACOTARs and Fourth Wings, have created a there's been ones before, obviously, but this is the subgenre we're talking about, where it's a specific type. And for example, I wouldn't ever call Sword of Kaigan romanticy. Not in a million years.
No.
Not in a million years. I would call it, say, hey, it's a fantasy book, and there's a relationship element in it. But
romance
tends to be,
when people say, oh, it's a romance, it's normally about the honeymoon period of, like, you know, falling in love.
Yeah. This is a married couple.
Yeah.
Already. And so I think for that being the case, romanticy kind of already is boxed in this place of... It already has its archetypes. It already has the things you expect to get out of the genre. When you say, hey, read this romanticy book, I should know as a reader what to expect. And so I think you would have to change the subgenre for it to appeal more widely. So I think you're already put in the box of, you would do a bad job pitching a book if you then... Romanticy has to mean what it means now. Because that a reader that's going into a bookstore saying, hey, what's a good romanticy book that has dragons or that has...
Well,
yes,
I guess
whatever.
This whole discussion now is more about, is romanticism is the genre its intention? Meaning, is it just, hey, the combination of romance and fantasy? Is that the right definition? Or is romanticism its results? What does it tend to do? Because I think more so we are talking about specific tropes, character issues, or character archetypes that are repeated. There are these more specific issues that we have with romance that seems to be far more of a pattern in romanticism as a genre.
Yeah.
So is romanticism that, or is it what it's intended? Just the the broad blanket of fantasy and romance.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I lean toward that. I would be very... Now, I would imagine it must exist. There must be a romanticy book that was written to target men. Because most of them target women. I'm wondering if it exists.
No, I'm sure there are. There has to be. You're making me think, though, of when we were going down that little rabbit hole of saying the elderly couple mm-hmm. getting together, and you mentioned guards. I think integrally, at least to my taste, and maybe this would be the broader male audience, it would be my immediate thought went to the elderly couple because I'm not going to direction of more sex scenes. Like, my head is going toward, what would be a nice theme and cute story or something about the love or something about the character. My mind goes to, I want a fascinated character or a different perspective, or I want... And the grandparents coming up, or hey, mate, it's a fantasy. How about you get the perspective of a flying Komodo dragon, not a dragon, because it has to be different for some reason.
I either want tension of the will they won't there, and it be genuine of mm-hmm. There's actually they actually are butting heads. There's some real disagreement. It gets heated. There's
intense
back and
conflict.
Forth.
Yeah.
Or I like this type of story too, where it kind of completely skips that, like the quickly fall in love, but now it's, you know, two lovers against the world mm-hmm. and they quickly turn it like then it's their relationship against everyone else, and then it's more the external problem. I think that works pretty well when you transition that, like then it's that type of story. When it is an ineffectual tension, will they won't they, or for the whole book where I know they are going to get together and the tension they have feels fabricated. And then they get together at the end, and then at the end, it's the couple against the world. I'm like, we could have skipped like 75% of this. Like, get together closer in the beginning, and then have the power couple against the world. I would find that more interesting. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's these tropes that are just bothering me. So
reminds me of Mr. Smith as a fun movie that people haven't seen with Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt. You remember? Mm-hmm. Have you seen this movie?
I think on a plane.
The plot is they're both spies and assassins, but they don't know the other person's a spy assassin, and their next hit is each other.
Yeah.
What a cool premise.
What a fun one.
What a fun premise for a movie. And that's maybe a part of it's that. The last thing of unsolicited advice that nobody wants to hear, because again, we're not the audience for this.
We're not your target audience.
Execution is the most important thing, but I love a good idea. I love a fun idea that it's a memorable thought. It seems creative. It seems like it has a soul, mm-hmm. a little bit of a soul in the story of, ooh, I see an author that was writing this, not just to have a relationship, but there was some inspiration or spark that was the drive of the story. Now, for Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the thought in my mind goes to, ooh, what a neat idea. If you pitch that to me, great. Now, the pitch I would give for a fourth wing is, imagine you're... generic fantasy world with dragons and a romanticy. I don't know what idea to say more so than the setup is it's a romanticy, but with dragons. Or Akatar, it's a romanticy, but like with fairies. There's not the spark of a soul and idea there that gets me to go, ooh.
It's smut with dragons.
It seems like you just insert, some generic fantasy thing, whether it be dragons or fairies or whatever. You got that. Okay, you have, I don't know, you're just filling in the quotas. You're just going, what do you need to make a romanticy work rather than
versus
a good idea?
A generic fantasy book, if it is like pretty, you know, insert standard fantasy world that's not super unique. If the whole book is focused on that, generally, often, most of the time, they'll have... there'll be a nugget of, mm-hmm. ooh, that's a fun twist on the fantasy realm.
Certainly.
That's a cool little added bonus. That's a new direction I haven't seen.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's small. Like, that'll normally be a focus, and it'll be something to key in on. Of like, oh, they did something interesting with it. Romancy seems to be like the fantasy world is just generic fantasy world. There is nothing fresh and new or interesting, unique. It feels soulless. And the romance itself is also... generic, weak, bland, no interesting twist to it. Like, they're both boring. And because they're trying to share page time, they don't seem to have enough time to breathe and be their own. But yeah. basically, we hate love. We're against, you know, romance in general. And
no canoodling on our watch.
Everyone's got to put on their chastity belt. That's what I'm saying, basically. Right? Rich.
Yeah.
Why do you got yours locked in. Oh, lock key is like in the mouth. Like,
why do you think I have this laptop holder so nobody can see my giant chastity belt? Okay. I just wanted to hide it on camera. But I am that much of a prude. I want none of my junk anywhere near the frame. Okay. I've got to look at you. You're just free willy over there.
Look, I'm a little bit of a prude, but I'm not that much of a prude. I'm an extreme prude in my literature. I don't want to I'm fine with literally every other medium to some degree. Fully fine. Makes sense. I can enjoy it. Whatever. In literature, I don't like it. I haven't found one example where I've ever liked it. It's weird and creepy to me. I don't like it at all. I mega prude here. I want none of it. Get out of my fantasy.
If you want to check our merch at tutoramble.com, we're going to have chastity belts up tonight. So if you want a free... so don't expect that. But that would be a little funny if we did.
Be a little funny. The tutoramble chastity belt. Very applicable. Really right. Works.
This has been another tutoramble episode. We hope you enjoyed. Let us know what you think of romanticity down below.
Bye, everyone.